welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It is episode number 398. My name is James Gilmore, and I am joined once again by Emily Soden.
You guys are going to get sick of me sometime soon.
Never! Impossible, because we've only been here for two, so, you know, it takes at least four before I start to push you gently towards the door, the digital
like your
door.
Your opinions are great, but shush.
No, I think you'll find that everybody loves having you here. What we're going to have to say right now, I'm going to put it out there, I'm a little bit delirious, a little bit tired. Those of you overseas may know, but if you're in the UK, you definitely know there was an election last night, which didn't turn out quite the way that people expected. I'm sure some people are very upset about that. Others, possibly near to me, or me, might be not entirely unhappy about that. But either way, when stuff started happening last night, I ended up staying up for ages. So I'm a little bit on the, what time is it? What day is it? And who's the Prime Minister?
It's the social medias that does it, because then the people start bringing out the GIFs and then, you know, the memes, and then off you go. You know, there's no going to sleep after that.
And then suddenly I'm hype, and I was, you know, I was all prepared to sleep the sleep of quiet disappointment. But no, it went the other way. So excuse me if I sound a little bit croaky and croakier than usual. But don't worry, because I've still had time to throw a bit of a show together, and as it turns out, it's great. As Em is our news person, she has pointed out it's been news mad this week, so we can chat to you about WWDC, we can chat to you about Apple Game Awards, about Super Meat Boy new games, oh, it's well exciting. New releases, looking lovely, a certain sequel to a certain very, very big game, Monument Valley. Arrived, so we'll be giving you the skinny on that. And we're also going to be talking to Colin Lane, who is an indie developer who has produced such PG favourites as Wrestling and Golf Zero. So all that to come in the next half an hour or so. First of all, a little bit of news. So Apple had its WWDC keynote this week, and of course we were on the sidelines giving it full scribbles and maximum coverage. You, Emily, gave us a massive lowdown, which you can find all of the highlights on Pocket Gamer. I'm going to skip through the main ones. Some stuff which I would consider maybe less exciting, things like Apple Watch OS 4 is on the way. So if you've got an Apple Watch,
good for you.
Yep. Cool. I'm sure there's some of you still out there. Basically, more Siri. Lots more Siri on there. Some new watch faces, Kaleidoscope, and some Toy Story themed one. That's pretty great. And they're going to boost up the exercise apps in terms of like trying to give you more inspiration, apparently. So some more pop-up ads? I don't know. Notifications?
To be fair, the gym thing is kind of cool.
So what's the angle on that?
Well, like gym equipment that's like compatible, you can use it. Sort of, it tracks your stuff, and then you can just like import it into your watch.
I see. Your watch.
As a watch.
Via WAP.
But yeah, you can import like all your statistics into your watch.
Okay, fair play. No, that's a good idea, because my dad is a sort of cyclist. He likes cycling, so he has one of those things he straps onto the bike, and he's always having trouble getting it to sync up with his iPad. So I think he'll be pleased to hear more compatibility with more ads. But he doesn't have a Apple Watch, so pfft. We got the eye-watering iMac Pro, which is going to be turning up with some Thunderbolt 3 enclosure AMD Radeon RX 580. You can have 8, 10, or 18-core Xeon processor, depending on what you choose. Basically, it's going to be a big old meaty thing, and I've seen prices around like $5,000 for the new Apple iMac, and it's very expensive, but it's very flash. But we're mobile, so we're more interested in things like iOS 11, which has been chatted about. What they're trying to bring to it is a files app, which is something that I've sort of been wanting for ages. Some way to manage your downloaded files, whatever they might be. So at the moment, if you're on iOS, right, and you know, you see something on the internet, you can save to Pocket or something if you're trying to save a web page and then read it later. You can save photos and pictures and stuff to your photo reel, but if it comes to like, I want to download a PDF, or I want to download something, you know, from the iCloud, or I want to download things to back and forth to Dropbox, you all have to access it via lots of different apps and lots of different menus. What this is supposed to do is find a way of keeping all that stuff together, so you can get all your files from the iPhone, the iPad, the iCloud, and Dropbox all in one place, which would be, for me, hella useful. Do you use like Dropbox and whatnot on your iPhone, or do you kind of stick with your PC for things like that?
In all honesty, I'm like a solid PC, or because I have a laptop as well, obviously. So I kind of just use those for my filey bits and bobs. Like my iPad is mainly just for quick browsing and, you know, obviously games. And I'm not very efficient when doing business. I used to actually, before I got my laptop, I used to do a lot of writing on my iPad. I always found it really annoying. Yeah, because I had like a little Bluetooth keyboard that I bought. And I used to find it really annoying the fact that I'd have to go into my app, like into like Word or something like that, and just kind of relaunch my files all the time. So I don't, it physically baffles me that they haven't put files into iOS yet.
Yeah, just a very simple basic file manager for managing everything. And it looks like this could be something like that. So I'm very much in favor of this. I'm a big Dropbox user across all formats. And it just, you know, it's an incredibly useful thing to have. So that's something to look forward to. Of course, the thing that does come with iOS 11 is the removal or the potential for 32-bit apps not to work, because the whole thing is going up to 64-bit.
Yep, that's why a lot of, you'll see like on the App Store and like on iOS, sort of like Clement's Twitter at the moment is all about like iOS developers updating their apps to be 64-bit, just because, you know, it's the death of the 32-bit apps, without a doubt.
Yeah, every time they update iOS, some games will stop working unless they make a few tweaks to make it work within the operating system. This is a whole different level of that, where everything's been made in 32-bit, or the majority of it is, and when it switches to 64, these apps simply won't work. So either developers go back, take the time to update all their apps, or they just won't work. They'll have to abandon them. And when it comes to either, you know, huge developers who've got loads and loads and loads and loads of games, that's a huge undertaking, but they might be able to do it because they've got the money. But more importantly, if you're an indie developer and you're, you know, one or two person team and you're trying to work on your new game, that's where it becomes really tough, because maybe you don't have the time and resources to go back through your back catalog. So we might end up losing cool ass games. It's difficult because it's progress, and progress sometimes comes at a cost, and you can't just go, well, we're never going to update to 32-bit, because then we won't be able to make any newer, cooler, you know, more interesting, more accessible games. But it's always a shame to think that we're going to lose stuff in the process. But when it happens, I'm sure we're going to make a list of, here are the games that are being threatened, here are the games that are no longer working, and we'll keep an eye on it, so you'll have an idea of what you will lose and hopefully what you'll gain as well. And then there's the HomePod, which is kind of their Alexa.
Yeah, pretty much. And honestly, it looks like quite a nice little piece of kit.
Yeah, I just don't want any of them listening to me.
Oh, no, not at all. But I do like the fact that it's got, like, smart audio, so it can literally, it's like a bat. It just puts its little sensors around the room, figures out how big it is and where all the stuff, like, is, like the furniture and stuff, and then sort of adapts its music to be the best it could possibly be.
Yeah. I still fear these little talk boxes that listen to everything that you're doing.
Oh, yeah. Well, I listen to everything with headphones on, so there's no point me getting anything like this ever.
No, I guess so. But it'll be available. It's going to be $350, so it ain't cheap. But it's going to be out in December and coming to the UK and the US. You can find more info over on PG if you want to have a look. Moving away from tech and onto actual games, we've had the Apple Design Awards as well, which kind of goes hand in hand with WWDC. And the lists that have been highlighted for excellence, you know what? It's pretty good. And it's stuff I would say that we broadly agree with. And I assume we're taking credit for it, because we said all these games were good. And it all revolves around Pocket Gamer. So, we're talking about games like Splitter Critters, which was something that we saw in our big indie pitch, and I think actually won one of them, has got a design award for being well clever. This is the one where you slice up the level with your finger and you move the entire environment around to join platforms together so little aliens can escape to a spaceship. We've got reviews. It's very good. Mushroom 11, which is a game that you've played, isn't it, Em, with the blobby thing.
I thoroughly enjoyed it, because it's so, like, there's so many different touch points and intuitive, and it was just so much fun, and also incredibly frustrating to the point where it was maddening, but still.
Yeah, this is where you're stretching and morphing a blob so that you can make your way across a level, but it works brilliantly with your finger. It's one of those ones that translated perfectly from a mouse control on PC to touchscreen, so that picked up a bit of an award. Old Man's Journey, a game that we covered just a couple of weeks back, which we thought was absolutely lovely and gorgeous, and a sedentary stroll through an old man's memories, and it's just so beautiful and lovely. It's got awards, which isn't surprising because it's just the kind of indie stuff that looks great and people go for. And I'm really pleased to see the appearance of Severed, which was originally a Vita game, I think, and then it came over to iOS, and I loved it. This is one from last year. It put me in mind of the old-fashioned first-person kind of RPG adventures where you advance like one swipe at a time, in this instance, where you just kind of move forward grid by grid, block, 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 turn 90 degrees, forward, 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 but you're seeing it from a first-person perspective. So it's an exploration game where you're navigating loads of dungeons and finding objects and unlocking doors. But the presentation is so strong. It's got this wonderful, colourful art style, very, very minimal, and you're fighting these peculiar creatures using swipe controls in the similar way that you would be doing so in Fruit Ninja or Infinity Blade. And it's meshed those this very old-fashioned kind of dungeon exploration mechanic from old 90s first-person RPGs and mixed that with the very, very modern touchscreen swipey-swipey combat. And it's just a lovely combination. So they've all got nods from Apple, and we think that's a good thing. Because something we both like, I think, you and I, was Oxenfree.
Yes.
Another game that turned up from PC and PS4 over onto mobile and did it with style and panache and class. Well, they're working on, or about to release, a game based on The Mummy.
Yeah, the news came in this morning. The nice thing here is that I was expecting, you know, if you see like a movie tie-in with a game, it's always usually like a CCG or something like that, isn't it?
It's a CCG or it's an auto runner.
Yeah, or an auto runner.
But no, this isn't this, is it?
No, it's like a digital storybook, almost like a comic-based digital, like multi-choice story.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
It really is. It's apparently going to be like an episodic game. So where this new movie, which has just come out, ends, it's going to pick up from there and, like comic book style, walk you through this interactive adventure, which is a much more welcome thing. I completely agree. The first chapter will come out for free when it gets launched. I assume it's got to be coming out pretty soon because, you know, to stay relevant and tie into the movie, which, as I understand it, has not done particularly well.
Has it not?
No, bad reviews for The Mummy. It's off to a weak start. To be fair, it looks kind of waste from the trailers, but they'll have to see because it's supposed to kickstart this whole Universal Monsters Dark universe. Mm. So they were hoping for a stronger entry. But these guys are good. Like, the guys what made Oxenfree, they're quite lovely. Night School Studio is the name. And so, fingers crossed, they will have made something lush. And to be fair, what they did before, they made that Mr. Robot game.
Yeah, they did.
Which was actually, again, a very clever tie-in, where it was plays out like an SMS sort of Skype conversation or something, where you're talking to the dude. So it plays into the themes of the show, which is all about technology and hacking and covert communication and all that, and made it into this kind of interactive, again, story. And it was clever, and I thought it was actually good. So if anyone can pull it out of the bag, it's these guys. Finally for the news, Super Meat Boy Forever, a game title that was floated years ago and teased us with the promise of maybe turning up on mobile or Vita or something, and then never really appeared, has re-emerged today via the Team Meat... I love the fact they're called that. Via the Team Meat Twitter account. So they've busted out basically a new logo and gone, which is basically saying, hey, this project is still alive and not totally dead. Which is good, because it's 2014 when this first appeared. So we've gone, oh, I guess it's vanished then. Apparently not. And you said that below that first post, there are people hinting that it might be coming possibly to the Switch, maybe?
Yeah, well, they didn't confirm nor deny it. They said that you might not be disappointed. It would make sense for it to be on the Switch, given its nature, you know.
The problem with getting Super Meat Boy on touchscreen has always been the controls, and the developers have always been quite negative, let's say, towards it. But then they've rolled back on that a little bit, and they were working on that cat game for a bit, which then got cancelled, which is a shame. But coinciding with this appearance of the new Super Meat Boy logo is The End Is Nigh, which is Ed McMillan's own game, which is a brand new platformer, which looks like it kind of could be a sort of a spiritual successor to Super Meat Boy.
For sure. It is immediately exciting when you look at the gameplay of it, because it looks horrendous.
Yeah, they're not cheery. Like, he always tends to lean towards the dark and the Binding of Isaac, which was not the most cheerful subject matter. And this one, like, when you look at the visuals, it's almost even more stripped down in some ways than Super Meat Boy. It's like they've gone really monochrome with it, almost like Limbo in terms of just being blacks and greys and stuff like that. But it looks fierce. It doesn't look quite so ridiculously high speed as Super Meat Boy, because you're this blob which is jumping around, but they look like they have a lot in common. And that's good, because Super Meat Boy was good. 12th of July is when it's coming to Steam, so we'll have to see whether it makes it onto any other platforms. Fingers crossed, maybe for Switch, that would be nice. Keep your eyes peeled for it. If you are a regular podcast listener, you'll know that I took a shine to Golf Zero a little while back, which is a game that got featured on the App Store, which I saw as basically a combination between Crazy Golf, The Matrix, and Super Meat Boy. I am talking to Colin Lane, who is one of the developers behind that game and some others. Colin, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
To go down the list of games, I mean, we'll start with the most recent one that I really took to. I know there's some other stuff in the pipeline. Where did Golf Zero come from? How did you come up with that idea?
Good question. Golf is something that I'm always drawn to. I actually don't like the sport of golf, but I like I like the mechanics. So Golf Zero was my third golf game. I just kind of like 2D golf. Super Stickman Golf, the noodle cake game, is one of my first mobile experiences, and that really kind of pushed me towards wanting to design games. So I think I was looking for, well, I made a 2D golf game that was level based, but it was very static. So I started toying with the idea of being able to walk around the course. I had this kind of crazy idea of swords and sorcery, but with golf. So you're exploring this really cool environment. You're walking around, but you're also playing golf shots, which in the end I didn't make. But the idea was there. Then it kind of became Sir Golf-a-Lot, which was a guy kind of fighting demons with a golf club. But in the end, I felt like I was losing too much of the golf. So I went back to the mechanics of golf and then tried to find a way to make it dynamic and fast-moving, and the kind of Super Meat Boy-style platforming is where I ended up.
I end up latching onto specific mechanics in games. Like, there's usually a particular thing or a particular, like, 2 or 3 second loop, which is where a game lives or dies. And in this one, it really is those places where you have to jump, jump, jump. Very often the game puts you in a situation where you're jumping between different platforms or spikes or getting over something. And the hole which you're aiming for is very high and out of place, and often there's no platform beneath. So you end up doing lots of shots to nothing, or basically jumping out into the middle of nowhere. And then as you're falling through the air, tapping, and then you get that, you know, 2-3 seconds of bullet time where you have to aim the shot and get it off. And everything slows to a crawl, and that's sort of the moment where the game comes to life, if you like, or the moment where you go, hold your breath, and then see whether it goes in or not.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that I found was kind of compelling. Like, was that hard to get right? I mean, because it's such a short window of the game, I imagine that took a lot of balancing.
Yeah, I mean, that was the moment I realized I had a good prototype, when I finally implemented the slow motion. And the kind of traditional platforming is you never want to die, do you? I mean, that's worst case scenario. But I found that I could put the hole in kind of, it was more fun to put the hole in a location that when you had to jump way out of your comfort zone and inevitably to your death to be able to play the shot. So when I had to kind of jump off, you know, away from the safety of the platforms into the water, but you still had the kind of slow motion and pulled that shot off, then I realized that it had potential. That felt like that confirmed the prototype.
You've been able to get, like, featured on the front page of the App Store for this, which isn't your first time. One of the other apps that you developed, Rasslin, was the one that kind of brought you to people's attention the most, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. That was my first global feature. My second ever game, the game before wrestling, which was called Golf is Hard, that had a very kind of, I guess you could say, minor feature in Europe. Or just in, I think it was just Britain and a few Scandinavian countries. But that kind of gave me a bit of hope and made me kind of think there's a future in this. And then wrestling went global, had a big feature.
Which, if you haven't played it, is a one-touch wrestling game where you're... It's difficult to describe in some ways, because it's not like you're controlling, like... punches and doing leg sweeps and performing combos, is it? It's much more of a...
It's physics, yeah. It's like soccer physics as wrestling, which is kind of where the influence came from. As we were making it, kind of, it seemed a bit like the scratchings of a madman. Like, is anyone going to actually understand what we're doing here? But it really did catch on. A lot of people liked it. And, I still like the AppSpy video that Peter did back in the day, and it's got quite a big number of views now. I think over 100,000 views or something.
Yeah, people took to it. And it's sometimes, I mean, the simple stuff can work really well, and that seems to be a recurring feature in your games, trying to have like a minimal interface and not loads and loads and loads of buttons all over the screen. Do you think that works better on mobile versus very complicated UIs?
Yeah, I'm kind of caught in the middle of this because I often do get criticized for not being a beautiful mobile designer, because I do quite often use on-screen buttons. I don't have complicated systems in the game in terms of energy systems and kind of really complex unlock systems and so on. My games are normally quite basic, but I don't mind on-screen buttons, and if I have an idea that I think will work but needs on-screen buttons, then I'll make it. I think, you know, there's enough mini metros and threes and these beautifully, perfectly designed mobile games out there that there's space for ones with buttons as well.
As a rule, the games that you provide, they're free to play, but they have the option where you can make a payment and kind of get rid of all the ads. Is that the model that you've stuck with throughout, or have you experimented with going premium and then sort of half free to play?
I've never experimented with premium, mainly because of I'm in a little developer circle with other people that use the game engine Stencil that I use. And there was a few people that were up and running before me. You've definitely played a few of their games. Adventure Islands, you made Super Dangerous Dungeons and Duke Dashington, these sort of games. And I've seen them launching premium titles and, you know, doing well, having strong Apple featuring, but compared to the revenue of the freemium models, if I want to do this full time as my career, which I do, then the freemium model just works better right now, in my opinion, for certain types of games, of course. I like to download a game, and if it's free, I'll, you know, it's like a sample, and then if I really like the game and the adverts are annoying me, then I pay to remove them. I mean, I play premium games as well, but I definitely do my research before I buy a premium game these days.
And I've always lent towards, I kind of like that model as well. I'm aware that perhaps it's not the one that earns you billions necessarily.
No.
And that if you want to earn billions, then getting those compulsion loops built around microtransactions and just allowing people to pay and pay and pay and pay forever is probably the way to go. But
yeah, exactly.
I find myself not being particularly drawn to those games and not really enjoying that loop too much.
No, exactly. And it's a real skill itself. I mean, I've seen people attempting to do those systems. There was one not that long ago from Stencil that I won't name right now, but they attempted to make this system, and they had very good featuring by Apple, but the balance was off and it didn't earn well at all. So it's a real skill. I mean, the people that design them for these kind of big companies, I guess that's their career, that's their full-time job, is monetization.
There's a lot of psychological research that goes into it. All that stuff about, that's where people started talking about the idea that is this becoming kind of like a exploiting people who like to gamble and stuff like that, because they're leaning into, or there were reports of people leaning into the similar kind of psychological studies and going, how can we get people to keep handing the money over again and again and again?
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is where it gets a bit sinister.
Yeah.
But that's not what everybody's doing, of course.
No, exactly. I mean, I've played games like... It was called Walking War Robots, but maybe it's just called War Robots. It had one of these models where it was constantly trying to get me to buy coins and buy premium, and I'll get double rewards. But I was actually making pretty good progress without having to buy anything. And eventually I got to the stage where I was just enjoying the game so much that I felt a bit guilty. So I bought some stuff anyway. But they had a very lenient system. They were giving you a lot of stuff for free. I think it can be done well, as long as there's not too much creepy psychology stuff going on in the background.
What kind of games do you find yourself playing, like on your iPhone when you got 5 minutes or whatever? What do you lean towards?
It depends on what kind of situation I'm in. If I'm about to go on a flight, I mean, I like the huge mobile games. Like, I played the entire campaign of Settlers, which was like a huge, you know, like it should be on a PC. And I played it all the way through GTA Vice City on my iPad. In games like, did you ever play Autumn Dynasty?
Yes, that was beautiful.
I loved that. You know, that was an amazing experience. And it wasn't a sit down for 5 minutes. It was like, you know, So I love these big games like Waking Mars, and the one I played recently was Egg. How do you pronounce
that? Yeah, we liked that. That was one of our big indie pitch. I think it won the Pocket Gamer Big Indie Pitch thing.
Okay, yeah. And that's an awesome game. There's a ton of detail in there. But I also love the pick-up-and-play games as well, like Leap Day, and, you know, the kind of arcade experiences. Things like Bouncy Hoops, Built for Speed, these sort of things. I love the little arcade experiences.
We talked about Bouncy Hoops last week, and that was another one where I'm like, I'm not sure I should like this, but I do. It is Flappy Bird, yes.
Yep.
But it's added enough to it where it's just sort of fun and I don't want to stop.
Yeah, it's very satisfying. Getting those high shots, the buzzer beaters, you know. Satisfying, yeah.
That's what we were discussing, the 3 or 4 seconds where a game lives or dies or comes to life. It's when the clock stops and it drops in and you go, is it going to make it? Is it going to make it? And then it restarts and you're like,
yeah, that feels good.
That's the bit. That feels good. That's what you're chasing every time. It's like, all right, I'll carry on a bit longer. This is fun.
Yep. I like a wide variety. I'm not so big at puzzle games. Like, threes is about as far as I go. I'm not very good at Sudoku or any kind of too cerebral games.
Sure. I know it's a sports theme with you guys. So, I mean, beyond Golf Zero, we got wrestling. There was Dunkers as well, which is another crazy basketball dunking game.
Yep, exactly.
What are you working on at the moment? Is there anything lined up?
Yep, absolutely. Sticking to that sports theme, I have a game called Touchdowners, which I see kind of, I'm starting to look at Dunkers and Touchdowners is kind of in the same universe. Well, it is very much, because it's similar in terms of gameplay as well. Sticking with the kind of soccer physics model, you've got two teams on each side, and it's basically American football. You can grab the ball like in Dunkers, but now you can actually throw it as well. You're controlling three people on your team, which is quite an interesting experience, just with two buttons. So it's
okay.
So that's all ready to go. I'm just working out the release date now, but I think it's probably going to be early July.
And like we said before, you're a small developer, like you, it's yourself, and then you said you hire in artists, like an artist to work with you on each game. So it's always a very small team.
Yeah.
We know we have people listening, you are developers themselves, and you know, maybe don't have massive resources or a huge team or loads of money to spend on PR. Like, what would you recommend if they're trying to get into games, or they're trying to get, you know, noticed on the App Store? What would you say to encourage them on their way, or maybe discourage them? I don't know.
No, I think they should definitely go for it. It's becoming a game developer changed my life massively. And I mean, I really just, I would suggest just start making games. A common mistake I see is people make one game and decide this is going to make me millions. This is going to start my career. And it's maybe their first game ever as well. Like, I'm a big fan of game jams and make small games and share them on Twitter, you know, share them on forums and talk to other developers and kind of refine your skills. If you make a game and you release it and it's not a huge hit, then make another one, learn from what you did, and definitely start making games. I mean, you hear it a lot, you know, like Rovio, what was Angry Birds, their 50-second game?
Yeah, 50-second or third game.
Yeah, exactly. So don't make one and think that's going to be the game. Just keep making games. And you don't have to be a programmer or a computer science graduate. I mean, just find, there's lots of different types of engines out there that you can use to make games, or you can work with a friend who's a developer or something. So don't feel that you need to have a big budget or you need to kind of start a studio or something. Just start making games. Maybe start as a hobby first and then build up from there.
Sound advice. Colin Lane, thank you for talking to us today. Best of luck with the future games.
Thank you very much.
Out and about this week, we got a very, very pleasant surprise in the form of Monument Valley 2, which got revealed and announced and released all in the same kind of day at WWDC. So this is the sequel to the game from 2014. That's how far away Monument Valley was, which kind of pushed its way into popular culture in a similar way that Pokemon Go did. So it was, you know, a small indie studio called Us2 which made it, done the game called Whale Trail before that, which we covered, which was kind of an auto flyer thing. Had a good look, but didn't really, you know, break through. And then they released Monument Valley, and people loved it, and it got reviewed by everybody, and suddenly all the mainstream sites cared. And then it pushed its way through to, like, as I say, mainstream culture by it turns up on House of Cards with Frank Underwood, Kevin Spacey playing Monument Valley. So pretty big splash it made. And we've been looking forward to seeing what they did next. And here we go. It's out. It's available right now. You can get it. We've played it all. We've reviewed it all. And it's really good still.
It's really good.
Isn't it? So you really, and I have really both good. Played this.
Yeah, like I couldn't stop playing it the other day, which again, for me, mobile games is quite rare. But I still think my favourite point of this whole thing was when I was covering WWDC the other day. It's just that I was talking to Glenn, I think, and the person who was on was just showing us the redesign of the App Store.
Mm-hmm.
And she was going, so this is Monument Valley 2, and then they just moved on.
And I was like,
I just stuck up a finger, I was like, excuse me. I was like, hang on, reverse that, tell me more about it. And then I kind of went online and everyone started tweeting. I was like, oh God, it's happening.
And they done good. I mean, to be fair, they didn't need the hype campaign because they just dropped it and everyone was excited because they loved the first game. So the changes, what's new? What we have is two lead characters instead of just one. So the previous game, you were taking control of this this princess character and guiding her around the world. And I'm sure you know by now, but it's basically like an interactive Escher painting and using the world's impossible geometry by twisting walkways and bridges and things into shapes they couldn't possibly make, and then using that to guide your character to the top. This time, it's more of a kind of a mother-daughter vibe that you get from it. So it's two characters, one an adult, one clearly a child. And as you move, the other character, the child, sort of trails behind and follows the adult character. And the way they build on this is they become separated at an early point in the story, and you suddenly realize that as you move, the child is moving to try and keep up with the mother. Even when they're on different pathways, she kind of follows the mum and tries to be as close as possible to the other character. And this ties into new expansions on old ideas. So in the old game, you had platforms you needed to stand on, and this would activate buttons, and other platforms would appear and things would turn and twist. But now there are platforms that require two people to stand on them. So it's about trying to guide not just the character you control, but the other character into the right place so that you can activate different bits of the world. There's a lot of show, don't tell in it. So there's no text in it whatsoever. And it's teaching you all these mechanics just by kind of showing you how your interactions affect the world and expecting you to go, okay, I get it, and then move on from there. And I love that. That is my favourite kind of gaming, because it's just so elegant.
Well, there's no faff, is there? There's no hand-holding. It's just like, right, well, we think you're smart enough to get it.
Yeah, it presumes that you will understand. And to be fair, it's not that it's super challenging. It isn't. I mean, the first Monument Valley, it wasn't a super hard game. It wasn't about trying to get you stuck for weeks. It was about you making you think a bit, and you're just enjoying the experience and the atmosphere and, you know, getting a sense of satisfaction from completing it. And this is the same. It's not a long game. You can fire through it in a couple of hours if you just sat down and chain it and you didn't really get stuck. But it is ambitious thematically. Like, this whole mother-daughter thing, the stuff they're exploring is really interesting, and it does it in a very clever way. It is remains one of the most gorgeous games series on the App Store and, frankly, on any platform.
Oh, yeah.
And some fun twists on the world as well, where usually you see it from this isometric perspective where you're always looking at it from the corner of the cube, if you like, and staring down at it. There are bits in the game where suddenly it almost goes flat, and then you have to turn it, and suddenly you realise it's a 3D space, but you're looking at it from a flat-on angle, and suddenly it looks like it's been drawn flat on a piece of paper. It really does mix things up while still keeping, you know, what was great about the original, but just building on it. I found it very difficult to complain about anything in it, which is nice.
Yeah, well, it got the highest of high awards on Pocket Gamer, so I think that pretty much says it, and from Harry, of all people.
Yeah, it got a platinum from Harry. Harry don't give out many of them. It got a 10 out of 10, and that doesn't happen. So, high praise indeed, and I think well-deserved. The only reservation I can possibly think of is it's short. So you have to go in knowing that it's short. It's £4.99, so it's not the cheapest thing. But I think it's worth it. I would rather have a two-hour game that just makes me feel feelings and is a beautiful experience that I will remember than, like, 10 hours of dull rubbish. So it doesn't bother me in the slightest. But some people have gone, it's a bit much for 2 hours. And, you know, I understand the concern. And maybe they'll pick it up in a sale or something, but I just think it's really, really worth it. And if, as a lot of the people who I imagine listen to this podcast, the way they feel, if you care enough to listen to a podcast about mobile gaming, a lot of these people we've seen from responses tend to like premium games, like the idea of premium, and don't like some of the tactics that free-to-play games employ to try and, you know, maybe slightly cynically grind money out of you by making the game less fun, that sort of thing. If you really do feel that way, then getting games like this, paying reasonable money for games that take time to develop and deserve it, that's how you protest against it. You vote with your wallet. So for me, Monument Valley 2, fantastic. Go and see the video review and all that business that's up on AppSpy. But yeah, we liked a lot. Another thing, continuing the Telltale adventure, as our Telltale correspondent, M, Walking Dead 3 finished. But now, Guardians of the Galaxy continues. Episode 2. How did this build on the first one?
It was actually, like, surprisingly better. I had to, when I did the first Guardians of the Galaxy episode, I, like, totally had to look at it through a completely non-biased way.
Mm.
In the first episode, a lot of the stuff fell flat.
Okay.
So all the jokes felt forced, and, like, there was a lot of stuff that kind of didn't work, but I still gave it, I think I still gave it like a 7 out of 10 or something, because it was a good entry into the series. Like, a lot of stuff happened with it. The pacing was okay. It was a bit jarry. But the second one was totally different.
Okay.
Like, it started off a little bit jarry, but once it got going, like, there were two characters especially, Rocket and Drax. Especially Rocket's story, like, that's completely thrown another layer on that, like, entirely.
Okay.
So it's not so much that Rocket is an asshole, Drax is just laughing for no reason, that sort of thing. Like I said in the review, they're doing it for a reason.
Hmm.
So, you know, if you haven't played Guardians of the Galaxy Episode 2 yet, I would suggest taking Rocket's path when you're given the choice, because it's really eye-opening.
Okay. Well, have you seen the movie, as in the new one?
Yes, I have.
Yeah. So, I mean, that builds on the idea of Rocket's arc of what he is. And it's touched on in the first movie as well, that he's kind of an aggressive Larry Gitt because he's had a horrible past and he is just, you know, he's crying on the inside, man. And I think they built on that in the second movie, and it sounds like they've done something similar here as well.
Mm, yeah, for sure. And, like, I don't know what it is. I think Telltale's getting, like, not wildly better, but better than they did in the first, like, few series that they did. Like, okay. When I went back to investigate The Walking Dead Season 3 choices, for example, there were a ton of endings you could have had, all roughly the same, but, like, variants of them.
Yeah, you mentioned that. Like, last week you said they're actually giving you the chance to make choices that have an impact.
Yeah, well, it's this one, like, even in the second episode, the choices that we made in the first episode are already affecting our paths, as it were.
Yeah,
like, I accidentally damaged my relationship with the Nova Corps because I tried to keep it last episode.
Right.
So I've kind of put myself in a hole here. And it's just very, very good. I've got high hopes now for this direction that Telltale's going in. I still hate the graphics, not going to lie.
It's a bit generic, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it's really generic. It looks like a 3D action game on mobile, no offense, but, you know. I don't know. But no, the thing that really bothers me is, like, for any close-up of the face, look at this next time you see it, any close-up of the face, you know those little pink things you have in the corner of your eyes?
Yes.
They're massive.
Oh. Okay.
In this game. I don't know why.
Hmm.
They're just massive, and also the character expressions and sudden, like, audio drops, and it's like, the audio's very odd in it. The soundtrack is great. But I don't know, there's, like, a lot of stuff that's, like, a little bit staticky.
Gotcha.
So it's just suddenly flicking between emotions and expressions, and suddenly, like, your atmosphere building soundtrack will suddenly cut off or something.
That Telltale engine, though, it's always been a bit wobbly. They've introduced a new one with the Batman game, but it's still a bit wobbly, you know.
It's pretty bad in this one. Like, worse than the past couple of titles, because I've, you know, the actual, ironically, the only Telltale game I haven't played is Minecraft.
I've played some of that. I played the first two episodes, I think.
Yeah, I don't know why I never played it. I think I just wasn't that fussed.
No, I'm not that fussed either. I did it because I should.
Yeah.
But sounds like a stronger second episode, which is often the way. The first one's tricky to establish character and build, you know, set everything up in the first episode, which often means it's a lot of heavy lifting and not much payoff. And then they can relax into it in episode two. So it sounds like they've done that here, which is good. So that's available to download iPhone, iPad, I think Android as well. Glenn's not here to review this, but he reviewed ARMS, which is the Nintendo Switch fighter, which has actually got a lot of love over the internet. I've seen people were very impressed by it. I think we were slightly less impressed. We gave it an 8 out of 10. He said it was an excellent spin on the fighting genre, but he highlights some control issues and the fact there is no single-player campaign of any kind to speak of.
Yeah, I think I played the Test Punch.
Yeah.
I did give it a go, and I wasn't actually, like, overwhelmed by it, considering how much, like, it's been pushed and how much we've seen of it and all the potential and stuff. It's a little bit repetitive.
Okay.
Especially, like, since there is no single player campaign, you kind of always have to have someone there with you to, like, fight against, and it's always the same sort of thing, you know, you fight you win or lose, yeah. Whatever
the issues that he has is occasionally motion controls can be a bit imprecise. No real surprise there, that's what motion controls do. But still, it's inventive and it's clever and it's fun and colourful, and you can see the full review up there for ARMS. Also out this week, so I've had a quick go on these, Super Nano Jumpers, which is another big indie pitch game that we've seen. It's a very, very stripped down, super simple platformer, single screen one, like back in the old Spectrum days where the camera just sits there and they run off the edge of the screen and then it blinks to a new screen. Basically, you have to jump over a load of obstacles, avoid spikes, collect coins, the usual stuff, but the character runs automatically. If you put your thumb on the left-hand side of the screen, it stops. So that's one control. Your guy freezes. And then the other side of the screen jumps. So you have to use a mixture of stopping yourself, then releasing and jumping and to get over everything. Very, very dirt simple. We gave it a bronze award. Not the freshest game, but enough there to keep you entertained, and it works and is fun. Also Dead Plague, which came out, which I had a very quick go on, which is basically a third-person shooter, twin-stick shooter style, but looks like, imagine Dead Island, but seen from a helicopter.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of trying to do that. It is, yeah, it's weird, because in some ways they've tried to make the environments look really good and sharp and realistic, but then the player movements look a little bit gawky. I haven't played it for long. You know, it functions fine. It's free to play. I don't think I'm going to be very excited by it, and seems quite derivative of every other zombie shooter, but, you know, you can get that for free, Google Play and App Store right now. That's Dead Plague. And a couple of other things we saw, which was Simple Nights by Madcat Games, which is just a clicker thing you can batter your way through. Looks a bit like Minecrafty / Final Fantasy with a bit of JRPG business. Farming Simulator 18's out!
Hooray!
I've played way too many of these games, the Farming Simulator games. I always end up playing them on mobile, and every time I play them, I'm like, nope, still don't get it. Still not for me, but whatever. It's out there. It's available. You can buy it for iPhone and for iPad. And GX Monsters, which is like a multiplayer racer that you view from the side. Looks a bit sort of Mad Max-y, post-apocalypse-y. Free to download on iPhone and on Android. Whew. God, that felt like a lot to get through, actually.
Yeah, it's been a busy week, considering there hasn't, like, been an enormous amount of, like, releases this week. It's pretty stacked. I like it.
Lots of news, and Monument Valley 2, very exciting, and probably our game of the week, I would say. All being well, we'll actually be talking to one of the creators of Monument Valley next week in our interview section of the podcast. So I would advise you to subscribe and stick around for that one. It's going to be good. And of course, join us for all the new releases and chat and E3 things happening, you guys. E3, it's going to get messy. You know it.
I didn't realise it was happening on a weekend this year.
Look forward to all the surrounding hype on next week's show. Thank you for joining us. Like, subscribe, rate, all the rest of it. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Ta-ra.